Hey, podcast friends. Do you need to elevate your spirit, feel lighter, feel happier, feel looser, clear your trauma, clear your stuck life, past life energy, clear your karma? Do you want to forward your spiritual progress? Do you want to deepen your spiritual path? Do you want to deepen your connection to the divine source of the creation of all that is? Then maybe you should join us in Massachusetts, April 16th to the 19th. I'll be leading a four-day Christ Light healing retreat. The Christ Light has nothing to do inherently with religion or Christianity. It's just a very powerful light that is known as the Christ Light that brings through, honestly, the most profound healing light I've yet experienced on earth. Christ, Jesus the Christ, was a human man around whom a religion was formed because the light he was bringing forth was so strong. So for 4 days, April 16th to the 19th, I'm gonna transmit Christ light right on at ya to heal all your stuff. So join us. Email me at klrubin, K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N, @gmail.com to ask me any questions you have. 4 days of healing, you can join us online or in person. Christ Light Healing Retreat, April 16th to the 19th, klrubin @gmail.com for questions. Love and light, love and light, love and light, love and light.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions you're asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of catch. We laughing, we drafting the passion to vary. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's bask in it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Okay, this is an interesting thing to talk about, though, because like in the sort of some of the spiritual worlds that I've been a part of, there's this whole framework idea that the tech revolution is like literally the antithesis to the awakening of human consciousness. Like there's an idea that like tech is actually like the whole problem and why everything slowed down. I happen to think, okay, energetically, when I feel into that, it's like there's a lot of truth in it. But I also think that because, like, you could easily say, if we were just organic and we were farming and we were just making love and shooting deer with a bow and arrow, and we had never gone agrarian, you know, and we had never. So you could easily make that argument, right? That we should get back to the land, back to nature, because the divine light is organic and nature is organic and la, la, la. But then it's just like, it's so evident that every race of beings, aliens, all the other star nations, everybody, as consciousness evolves through a race of beings, they develop technologies. And then it's about like, where do you point your technology? Like, what is your technology doing? Not like, did you develop it? Right. So I think that the spiritualists who are like anti-tech entirely are kind of closing their minds to the maybe, you could argue, obvious value and necessity of technology.
Right. I mean, let's remember that technology includes the wheel. Like that is technology. Like, mm-hmm. And the wheel is one of the greatest spiritual metaphors we have, you know, and technology includes fire. Technology includes the building of a yurt, you know, like it's just, but I know I'm being a little overly reductionist because I think we are talking about more sort of high level non-human things that take us away from our human connection.
Okay. One of the main things in my life, like growing and developing has always been like thematically has always been moving away from black and white thinking and into like inclusive and thinking, they call it. And when I went to the Sufi school, I learned that like in the deepest layers of our consciousness, the way to live in the and energy the most and with the most ease is to drop into the heart, because the mind is the thing that sorts and categorizes things, but the heart is the thing that unifies things. Give me a second while I murder my cat.
Okay.
Excuse me, I'm going to just
sounds like your cat is being murdered. So we might as well finish the job.
That's really great. Just 1 second. That's terrible. Good times. Everything's fun. I love everything.
Are we Mercury retrograde? I don't know. That's a thing that I've heard is a thing.
Oh, you're going to be sassy about the retrograde?
A little bit. Okay. I just feel like whenever something's gone wrong, all I hear is, Mercury is retrograde.
Well,
not from you, but from like everybody.
I know. The problem with Mercury retrogrades that makes cynical people believe in them less is they do happen regularly. All right. The time they're happening.
It's like so every other month is a retrograde.
And they actually are every other, like often. So then anyone who's already cynical is going to be like, oh, okay, because what, every other month there's a, and it's like, yeah. So nobody can win. You can't win. People who don't like things, they'll never like them. And people who do. And we can't talk to each other.
I believe.
They'll continue for the rest of time.
And a wise man, a wise person once said, haters gone hate.
Oh, players going to play?
Uh-huh. And haters going to hate.
Play. Players going to hate. I just want
to. Oh, I wasn't ascribing that to that particular sage. I feel like the sage that originated that phrase predates the sage you are quoting.
And who is the originator?
I don't know, but I think it's, I believe that your sage is quoting a more ancient piece of wisdom.
There is no part of me that believes my sage was the first one to coin that phrase.
I just fell down a rabbit hole of listening to a podcast in which they were arguing about who originated the idea of that you can rhyme orange with door hinge, because they were mad that everybody had given that to Eminem, which Eminem did not claim. Eminem just was quoted in a thing about using that example. And then everybody's like, Eminem invented that. And this guy's like, no, a bunch of puppets on a Canadian TV show is where I first heard it. And then they had to find that Canadian TV show and the person who wrote that.
I wonder if it's Blue's Clues.
No, it's way before Blue's Clues.
Okay.
Sorry, as the Eminem fan, as the person who listens to Eminem on a daily basis, who also produces and edits this podcast, my new favorite Eminem lyric is, I can rhyme orange with banana or nana.
That's dumb.
Wow. Sometimes it's just about that rhythm, you know?
Yeah, he just bends it like Beckham and it works.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That brings me back to that Chris Rock joke where he says, women don't care how misogynistic or rapey the lyrics of music are, as long as it has a good beat. He's like, you'll be in the club and she's like, sucking on a dick, taking it in my ass. Like, they don't care. They're just like, yeah, girl, sucking on a dick. It's darker than
got
sucking
a good
on a
beat.
Dick, though.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the phrase is in his joke, but you get the idea.
I do.
Okay, what the hell were we talking about before my Achilles?
We were talking about haters gonna hate, because Mercury retrograde and tech has been a pain in our ass today.
Okay, so here's my question, or here's a thought for us to discuss. All right, so if inherently technology is always going to occur, if we're going to kind of run with that idea, technology occurs. People, beings, aliens, whoever, comes into consciousness, and then they're like, well, we got to travel places, so we got to make a wheel, and then we got to make the wheel go faster because we have to get there faster, and then technology happens.
Then a warp drive, right? That's the next thing.
Yeah, exactly. Is the only problem with technology, like we said before, what it's being used for, or is inherently, is there anything about certain technological advances that are inherently toxic or anti-human or anti-spiritual evolvement?
I have one thought. This just tickles a thing that my dad taught me about, which is the concept of the cautionary principle. And it's a scientific idea where you should approach everything with caution, literally, and don't release something into the wild before you've really done a holistic, you know, observation of all its permutations. And unfortunately, we don't do that. We go, does it work? Yes. Okay, let's test it for this particular piece of, is it going to explode? No. Great. We got it. Go. Phew. But that's just an idea that's really hard to manage, because I think.
I mean, yeah. No, go ahead.
Just like, you know, the FDA has protocols that covers about, you know, 60% of what it should cover, probably, you know, and then there's a lot more that we just kind of go, oh, well, we can't really deal with that. So I'm just going to let that go.
Also, I mean, we could take the much more cynical tack or point of view and say that it's something along the lines of, I mean, simply put, we test it to see if we can make money on it doing the thing we want it to do. But we don't test it in the other 80 areas that it could be tested in, because we're not concerned with those areas because they don't make us money yet.
Yeah, I'm like, really hung up. I'm hung up on the self-driving car. Like, I feel like a grandfather, get off my lawn type when it comes to the self-driving car. I'm not all the way on board. I'm just like, there's something hanging up in me. It's like, I know we can, but should we? And, I get it for trains. I'm on board with it for trains because they're on rails. But a car? God, that just seems like a bad idea. So, but I can't logically explain that. But there's something in that. Just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Right. When you say it seems like a bad idea, like in what way? Why?
As I start to answer you, I realize it's the same thing that can be applied to, should we make a car?
Okay.
Because should we make a thing that can just go anywhere with and drive anywhere and crash into anything at a high speed? We've done that. That's what a car is. And now all we're doing is making it computerized. And so maybe that's safer. But my old grandpa man is like, we're barely in control of the first version. Now we want to change that into something even more less human controlled and more AI over evil robot overlord controlled.
Totally. And that comes back to, what is your point of view? Is your point of view that humans are more trustworthy or computers are more trustworthy? Oof. And the computer nerds say computers are clearly more trustworthy. And we earthy spiritual types are like, no, incorrect. So right. I don't actually take that point of view that that's incorrect. If I think about it while we're sitting here, I'm kind of like, I think it's almost like equal parts terrible. In other words, like, we fuck up all the time as humans running machines, and machines fuck up all the time running machines. Mm. Now, I'm sure somebody has done the math, you know, maybe Elon has the numbers on what are the percent, how much, what
percentage? I don't trust that motherfucker any farther than I can kick him in the face, and I can't get near him, so.
I want to talk about this because the other day, oh my God, I have a really cool alien story. Okay. It's layers deep. The other day, some of my friends here and Newman Manfredson and I, who, by the way, now knows that his name on the podcast is Newman Manfredson.
Awesome.
The five of us went out. We had this like spiritual assignment in the Akashic Records that we got to go do this like high level woo-woo assignment, which I'll talk about in a bit if we want to get into it. But it was essentially to build an energetic portal that like taps the earth more into the Galactic Federation. Just normal stuff you do on a weekend.
Sure.
And the day after we did it, it was a full snow day. And we were flying. You have to beep it.
Take a note of the time.
Sorry. Newman Manfredson and I got snowed in the next day. And like, we were feeling pretty lazy anyway. So we had just like lazied around and like watched a bunch of movies and ate too many carbs. That same day, Newman Manfredson got a text from his brother in Pennsylvania. And the brother sends us this text and it's a video. And the video is of from the brother's point of view on his house's porch, looking in the sky at 5 a.m. because he works a night shift. And there is a legitimate rocket ship in the, black sky, picture it, black sky. And then a white comet looking thing going from the right side of the frame to the left side of the frame with a huge white tail. It looks like there's a comet like 20 miles away. And you hear his brother in the video go, what the fuck is that? It's enormous and terrifying. Of course, they Google it and they find out that Elon had launched another SpaceX shebang bang in, I believe, Florida. So what was actually happening was SpaceX was launching a bunch of crazy rocket things, one of which I guess blew up upon landing, but some of which didn't. I think that's true. And then the rocket that they saw, but this is where I get, they were in Pennsylvania. The rocket was launched in Florida. So why is it moving from the right to the left in the frame of the camera in Pennsylvania? And Newman Manfredson was saying that it's because of the way the earth is turning and the curvature of the earth, that it would appear to be going parallel to the ground as opposed to up. Why was it not going like this at a 45 degree angle? Desmond,
I feel like Desmond might know.
Well, he moved the mic to his face.
No, as soon as you said 45 degree angle, I realized that's because I was going to say, yeah, rockets don't go straight up and through the atmosphere. They need to take an angle through the atmosphere. But yeah, if it's but and it might be because since it's not like your regular rocket that's just trying to get to the moon as quickly as possible, he's trying to develop, you know, a flight that you and I can take without right. needing to be in NASA for 10 years. It might need an even gentler angle to ease through the atmosphere nice and slow.
That's a good theory. And also, but so that could answer question one, but then why in Pennsylvania are they seeing it?
Let's put out a challenge to our listeners. This is an opportunity for anybody who listens to our podcast, who is an astrophysicist, to contact us and A, answer our question, and B, be a guest on our podcast anytime soon.
Oh my God. Such a good idea.
Astrophysicists unite. Get in here.
Does that's a reasonable series of questions I'm asking though, right? Like, why would you see it in Pennsylvania if it took off in Florida and it's not traveling around the whole earth?
Maybe it is. I don't know. I don't have an answer. So neither of us are going like, duh, Katie, it's this. So clearly it's a good question. Yeah, it's a very good question.
Okay. Then then the end of the story is his mom later said, oh, that must be the aliens that you guys created the portal for. Created a portal. And then we saw them out the back porch.
So maybe done. Elon is the alien that you have invited to visit.
But Elon's been here a while. And we just built that portal.
But remember, time is...
Ah, good
dot, dot, dot. it's my way out of it. Time is, you know, less strict than we assume.
It's circular time. It's circular. Right. Okay, now back to Elon being evil or not trusting him as far as you could kick him. I think that because I have a little bit of a libertarian in me on this topic around, and I want to discuss it because I don't really know what the fuck I'm talking about, but this is how I feel in my body. And I want to challenge it because I don't know what truth is here on this topic. Like, because NASA is government connected, I was going to say run, but it's like more complicated than that, I guess. Government affiliated, government partially funded. I don't know. They've got a lot of red tape and a lot of, you know, checks and balances, which is good for a space program because you're fucking going to space and you may as well take your time and do it well. But also they run into all these limitations. Like, we watched this docuseries recently about some of these topics, and it was talking a lot about how after they went to the moon, NASA was kind of, well, we got to the moon, now what do we do? And they're all kind of like picking their butts, like, we're not really sure. Meanwhile, the Elon Musks of the world are like, the world's going to die. We have 20 years before the planet is like totally fucked by our emissions. We need another place to go. We need to figure out how to get to Mars. And he's like, I have $1 billion. I'll just figure it out. And that's where I go, like, that privatization is actually like healthy for survival. And I think it's like, even if Elon has his, it's the same sort of argument you make about someone like, if you look at the trajectory of the life of Bill Gates, and of course, depending on who you talk to, holy fucking shit, do a lot of people think Bill Gates is trying to control humanity with nanobots in the goddamn vaccine, which seems so crazy to me. And I'm the woo-wooest as they come. I'm the woo-wooest lady that you know. And I think that is so crazy. Anyway, but to make my point, if you watch the trajectory in the early part of his life, you could have easily said, this guy is a self-centered narcissist making the biggest company in the world, and his company is evil, and all they care about is money, and they made all these computers, and so what? Now, this bitch is busy trying to save the planet, heal the planet, find a solution for emissions, which the conspiracy people think is because he has to do that legally because he was going to go to jail, apparently, if he didn't do it. And everybody else who I hear interview him, where they directly ask him, is like, no, I just made all the money and then realized, well, life is empty and meaningless if all you do is make a lot of money. And it took me a while to figure it out. And then I had all the money. And that's how I figured that out. People don't usually figure out that money doesn't solve your problems until they're either taught well by someone or they get all the money.
So many thoughts on this.
Okay.
I don't trust him because I think that what you just talked about is press releases. I don't actually, because in practice, even the most recent version is, he's like, what? You're not going to let me just throw open the doors to my factory in the middle of a pandemic? I'm going to a different state that doesn't care. Wait, let me finish.
We're talking about Elon Musk, or we're talking about...
Talking about Elon Musk.
Okay, I didn't know who you were talking about. That's why I interrupted you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So Elon Musk, who I do believe is a raging libertarian in all of the, I know what's right and I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to defend it with the science I'm going to choose, and I'm going to ignore the parts I don't serve me. So, for example, several months ago, he was like, fuck you guys, I'm going somewhere else. And he was very vocal about it and very like, if I can't do it exactly how I want to do it, I'm going to go somewhere else in the middle of a crazy surging pandemic. He didn't, but then he did kind of force his own factories back open. And guess what? 600 cases in the factory in Fremont. Like, that's insane. So his disregard of what he needs tells me he's being a liberal. He's saying, let's go to space and let's go do this. But he isn't actually, as far as I can tell, and I could be wrong on this, actually addressing. Yeah, he's making power walls for wealthy people, and that's about it. I feel like he could probably solve the problem on a much more equitable global scale if he so chose to allocate his gazillions to that. But he is allocating it to most profit, most able to get profit.
I hear that point. I'm going to make a question-based counterpoint. It's a question. I don't actually know. Because I don't actually 100% have a point of view about this, because I'm not educated enough to have one. By the way, you understand why I interrupted you, right?
I do. Yeah, because you thought I was talking about someone else, like Bill Gates.
I didn't know if you were talking about Bill Gates or not.
I just was like, I just want to finish this thought so I don't lose it. So that's why I didn't.
Okay.
But now I get it. It's fine.
So
I didn't feel interrupted.
Okay. So here's an idea. There's a guy, I may have talked about this before, but there's a guy named Upledger who invented a healing modality called cranial sacral therapy. And one time I heard a guy being interviewed about, actually, that's not true. It's even less reliable information than that.
Oh,
I heard a woman being interviewed about an interview that someone else said about this guy. And she said that this he said, yeah, you're right. She said that he said, when someone said, like, what did you think of Upledger working with him? That this person said, well, I'll put it to you like this. He had the ego necessary to do what he was here to do. In other words, he like was kind of a dick and he fucked a lot of people over, but he got this like very difficult, subtle, very sophisticated, amazing body-based healing modality through to the world in a really big way that arguably, not necessarily, but arguably couldn't have gotten out as big had he not been such a pushy asshole or whatever kind of asshole he was. Okay. So there was something about that when I heard that I thought it really helped me kind of flip on its ear the idea where we can get a little black and white about the goodness, badness of ego. And I, what I've learned in my little healing journey is that ego is necessary to survive. You have to have an ego to choose the shirt you're going to wear that day, because there is a choice being made based on a sense of self that is separate from the rest of consciousness. When you're picking a shirt, if you were totally one with everything at every moment, you would be unable to pick a shirt because there would be no individuated Cassidy Brown who gave a shit whether it was plaid or black. You'd be like, I don't know. I'm just space. Who cares what shirt? And then you'd be naked and then you get arrested and you go to jail.
Yeah, that's less good.
You have to have an ego to survive and make basic decisions of survival. Not to mention like when you get into the more complex things about like competing in the marketplace and earning a living and la, la, la. You got to have an ego to support you. But the idea is to like transmute and heal and up-level the ego enough that it is functioning for the greater good. So you have a functioning ego that supports you, keeps you safe and alive, and does some good for other people. Like that's sort of the holistic sort of integral theory idea about ego. So one argument you could make, if that's true, if in fact we do need an ego to like eat a sandwich, build a building, whatever, make life happen, choose a romantic partner, buy a house, et cetera. You could say that like his ego might be out of balance now, but on the whole of time, like if you were to zoom out and look at like 700 years of time, is it actually bad? And I'm not arguing actually that it isn't. I'm just asking, is it actually bad that the egomaniacal part of him did whatever it did, if in the end we find a balanced way to navigate it, in the same way that Bill Gates started as like, I'm going to make all the money and be the most powerful, blah, blah, blah. And he did. And then he woke up a little bit and went like, now I'm going to use my power for good.
I mean, it depends on your example, because I think there's plenty of examples of things we could describe that, you know, I mean, I don't know enough about the sort of machinations of the U.S. economy, but to say like, well, we would not have invented cotton textiles without slavery, right? And I actually don't know if that's true, but that could be an example that someone could wield some version of. And I'll say then, good, we guess we shouldn't fucking have cotton textiles then.
Uh-huh. Like, or you could say we might have come up with cotton textiles
a different way.
A better way.
Exactly. So like this guy that you were talking about, Up Level, is that his name?
Up Ledger.
Up Ledger. Okay. Is that a made up name?
Nope.
So maybe it's like Swedish, Up Ledger.
Go ahead and Google it, bitch.
I will. I'll find out later. Bitch. Wow. Okay.
Well, why are you giving me such a hard time about this guy's name? That's his fucking name.
I'm not challenging you on his name. I'm challenging his name because it's funny to me.
I thought you were giving me a hard time.
I apologize if that's how it sounded. That is not how I intended it. Yeah. So, yeah. And I grapple with this obviously all the time. And I think we could bridge this idea even to one of the potential conversations about our podcast today, about like the idea of like growth. And if growth is inherently good or not, growth in the more in the sense of not emotional growth. I mean,
technological growth.
Technological and economical things forward that are momentum. Basically connected to capitalism. Growth in that sense. I'm getting off topic. I got distracted from my own brain. Sorry. So.
Well, you were saying that the
Up Ledger is not necessarily like the fact that. I think we can do that in hindsight is the problem. We can only go,
right.
Well, we get to it now, so I guess it was worth it.
Right. But I'm saying...
But if we're able to challenge it at the source, I feel like we're better off going, is it? Like, I think about your schools that you went to. They were great, but I've heard you say a lot of things about, like, that first school is some really fucked up shit of power dynamics that they were doing, and you got the tools, but you don't love how those tools were delivered.
But... I would argue, see, this is why I have this point of view, I think, is that I would argue that that's how I learned about being shitty about the tools. In other words, I'm glad they were shitty with me about the tools because I learned now in my business, I do not treat people the way they treated me. And for me, because I wasn't raised with like nurturing people who knew how to be with a baby or a child, I didn't know a lot about how to not be a dick. And so, I mean, especially when you're teaching spiritual principles, it's so easy to get into you being very special and you being very important as a holy master on the fucking hill. They being dicks is how I learned, I'm not going to be a fucking dick about that. Well, I'll be honest with you. It wasn't just that. It was that combined with, frankly, the 12 steps, like, and learning how to work a fourth step. That helped me learn about that too, but I getting to see it in action, how destructive it was. And I'll be even more honest and say, I had to go through two healing systems with two separate groups of people who were destructive and toxic in two different ways to really, really get the lesson of you don't get to be superior to people and abuse them because you have some spiritual insights for them.
Right. So on the individual level, in hindsight, you can frame the result. And I love that that is the truth, like that, of course. And I was sharing with a friend today a similar thing. I was like, well, what if the lesson is you shouldn't be with those people because of how they handled that thing rather than feeling bad about how it was handled? Like, so that's great on the individual level. But even just what you just said is like, you are still placing a value on don't be shitty. So like, I'd like to go back and because you could have probably learned don't be shitty by them not being shitty. Also, you know, you could have had that lesson come in a less toxic way. And luckily your awesome self was able to put those pieces together. And I don't mean that to stroke your ego. I mean that like that is a tough fucking journey to have to make happen. And thank God you were able to.
I see what you mean.
I think I would argue that you probably have preferred to, like, you already had trauma. So it would have been great if the lesson you could have learned from them there was like, don't be shitty, because you had already dealt with shitty.
Well, but here's what I know about trauma, unfortunately. For a long time, trauma survivors only can learn from pain, because we don't, if you give us something good and we haven't healed the trauma or integrated or even learned about the concepts yet, we're just going to destroy it. Because if you imagine, like, your heart is just like a lump of coal when you're coming from the amount of trauma I came from.
Is there a diamond at the end of this metafor?
I hope so.
Okay.
Let's find out on the way. Fair enough. My butt does feel a little sharp.
Good.
Maybe it's coming out right now.
Awesome.
I mean, people tried to give me good, lovey things. And I could tell, because I happened to have a sort of a heightened awareness about me, I knew that I was like not able to receive kind things and judging it incorrectly, but I was still not able to receive it and judging it incorrectly.
Mm.
So knowing that I was doing that helped me like change it, but I still just was like, fuck those Pollyanna loving people who treat you well. Fuck them.
Right.
Bend them over a chair and make them feel the pain I feel, because the kind of trauma I had was like from like a really toxic individual who himself was in so much pain that part of his MO in hurting baby people was to say, if I can't receive love, nobody will, which brings me back to the journey, the life journey of the 8 on the Enneagram. I have such an intimate, like lately, all these awakenings around the 8 on the Enneagram and realizing you would have to be so badly obliterated and annihilated in your early, early developmental stages for your MO to be vengeance. If your MO is vengeance, which every 8 starts with vengeance and ends with innocence, you have to think about what that person must have been through to start with vengeance. And it's almost always somebody else who came from vengeance. If I can't love, nobody will. Putting that in you in some way, whichever form of abuse gives you that, you know?
That is such a strong concept. That just brings up the idea of breaking the cycle. It's such a, you know, it's a cliche, but like the stepping off the fucking wheel is such a huge, that's the move that all those lessons taught you finally, eventually. And it took multiple iterations to be like, oh, you can step off the wheel.
I mean, and the other thing about the idea of iterations that I like to tell my clients this is that sometimes it's also like layers. So in other words, like you'll clear a layer of vengeance and be like super innocent and loving around certain areas of your life.
Mm.
And then, oh God, there's another one. And then you clear that. And then there's another one. And then one day, you know, hopefully there's a pure innocent heart open that has no defenses on it and no need to be vengeful in any way, which for me, because vengeance was so painful when it came in my direction, I've always been really committed to healing what causes it in myself. Even when I've acted on it and been terrible at it, it's hurt so bad to be vengeful, gratefully, that I was motivated to not be. And that's another reason that energy healing is like, I'm such a fan, is that even though the first few layers of my healing were very much mental through the 12 steps, it was like, oh, when you behave like this, you're behaving vengefully. Don't do that. And so then I learned how to behave well, but my heart was still tight and vengeful inside. And I still felt all this jealousy and anger and icky, vengeful stuff. So then I got into the question of like, well, how do you actually change your heart so that you're not just behaving well, you're a different heart now? Anyway, that's why I got into this stuff, because it worked for me in that way. But yeah, the point of getting off the wheel for all of us, it's like many teachers have said, when human consciousness evolves to the next level that it's heading toward now, maybe if we're lucky, human beings will be able to choose higher consciousness choices from joy and choice rather than from avoiding of pain.
Yeah.
But right now we do it from, it hurts so bad, I'm going to choose something better.
Right. Or something worse to really live in that pain, or in, try and spread it around, or get everyone into the same pool of glass as I'm in, or whatever.
Exactly. What were,
I have a strangely logistical question about humanity reaching the next level. Can we do it at our current population? Like, I feel like there needs to be a massive bottlenecking of the human race to get us down to a point where we can actually all take a step together. I feel like no matter, I mean, there's just so much shit in this world that I can't see even half of humanity all at once being like, I'm good. Let's do it.
It's the Thanos proposal. I get you. He's gone all Thanos. It's totally, there's points to be argued.
Yeah.
Can you articulate the Thanos proposal?
Thanos, in the Marvel universe, he is coming from trauma. He's looking around at the whole universe and going, we are fucked. But his way to solve that is to gather enough power so that when he snaps his fingers, half of all sentient life in the universe is evaporated because there's too many of us. And because he basically says it's a resource problem. We're all battling for resources and that makes us all shitty people. But then as a result, he puts himself in the position of, I will be the ruler of all sentience and I will remove half of them. And then I will be the overlord of the remaining ones.
What if you were to do half of the Thanos thing, which is like get rid of half the people and the sentient life, but not be the overlord of it?
Right. He never claimed the overlord part. That's my own sort of extrapolation of it.
But I'm saying
it's still like you're still however you slice, you are still murdering 50% of. Yeah.
Right. But if you zoom out.
Yeah. This is the debate that is had.
Is that an upledger situation where he was a dick when he brought us some good shit? Now, similarly, yeah, you killed a bunch of people and you're probably gonna have to die for it or go to prison forever, but you saved humanity.
Right. I mean, that's the eugenics argument to a certain extent. That's what happens in eugenics. Is they're like, well, we need better people. So we're gonna decide what better people is and do our best to make less good people. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that really just means rampant racism is what that ultimately boils down to. But
does eugenics necessarily include, or has it just historically always included racism?
I think it, because it's tied to the concept of a master race, it kind of has to include racism.
Okay.
Are you going pee? What's happening, Katie?
No, I'm sorry. I was trying to not disturb us and let the fucking cat back in from the murder.
You're better off just pausing, but it's fine. I love your commitment. It's amazing. I'm just going to tell the listeners right now, Katie is walking all around her apartment like it looks like the Blair Witch Project. And it's awesome. And she was carrying everything in her hands. And somehow, I don't know how she opened the door for the cat. It was with her left butt cheek or something. I'm not sure. But you were able to open the doors with full hands.
Well, let's be clear. I was carrying both the computer. I was carrying both my laptop and the microphone that is attached to the laptop.
Yeah.
And then I was able to open the door to let this animal back into this house, because I wish I could show you. I should have taken a picture of it. I have these picture windows over here to my right, and the cat was standing on the outside chair like this in the picture windows, like, can I come in? Because it's snowing.
Oh.
And she was like, oh fuck, my bad, can I come back in? And it was very adorable. I know, she's quiet, which she won't be.
I just want to finish this thought, and in the Marvel thing, no one ever addresses whether or not this culling of half of living creatures may actually give us a better fighting chance as a species. Everyone just gets pissed off and sad because they're missing that one person that they love. And it's like, oh, well, I don't even care if this is better for humanity. I just want Chris back. Right. And then everyone's fighting Thanos so they can get their Chris back.
And that's remember that Thanos does not vanish when Thanos snaps Thanos's fingers.
Well, it's random. I don't know that he definitely was in the clear. I mean, as the finger snapper, probably, but it was a completely random 50% other than
him. That's but yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, but yeah. See that right there is my whole point about why I mean, I guess I'm just more of the kind of an aloof Aquarian point of view where I'm like, if it's gonna save humanity and humanity has a better chance of growing up and getting woke, as it were, if there's fucking 50% less of us, your Chris is not that important. We're all so goddamn attached to our fucking Chris.
Right.
You're gonna die.
Even if I am the Chris.
30 years. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you better include yourself in the snap. If you're gonna champion the snap, then you better be 100% willing to accept your own snap.
Well, yeah, that's my point. That's why you don't make the Thanos character evil and narcissistic. You make the Thanos character someone who's like, I get that this is big picture and who knows who's, I get it. I'm not trying to be an overlord here. Right. I'm just trying to save this goddamn race.
Yeah.
That's our shirt. That's our shirt. All the answers. I'm willing to be a Chris.
I'll be your Chris.
Being humanity's Chris.
Do your work. Be a Chris.
Yeah.
So this is you have Karen's, which you don't want to be, and Kyle's, which you don't want to be, but you can be a Chris.
I like that.
It's good. Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting like debate topic. You know, obviously it's not a practical end topic because it's not going to happen that way. But
although you could argue that if we do have what some people think we're going to have, which is a series of pandemics
and mass die-offs. Yeah.
That we're literally in the middle of exactly this experiment right now.
Yeah.
That the herd is being culled, and perhaps there's no moral aspect to it. In other words, if you believe in Darwinian evolution, which is like natural selection, right? I mean, that's not a moral thing. That's
right.
Animals die and then other right, ones
it's
live.
Adapt or die. And that's the,
it's like you die. Some people just fucking die. And also like sometimes good people die and sometimes bad people die and sometimes healthy people die and sometimes sick people die. It's like, we could be right in the middle of that right now.
And there's definitely something we attach to the sort of the relative morality. Whereas I don't have like ethical or moral feelings about, for example, the virus itself. I have ethical and moral feelings around how awareness and stuff around that is applied, or how governments react, or how people use it as a weapon to expand some other thing. But the bug itself is neutral, is non-dualistic. It's what, I mean, it's the same as eugenics conceptually. The root concept is, but then that, okay, bringing it back to our very first thing. That's the problem with technology. The technology itself is not inherently bad. It is literally our inability to do things right that fucks it up.
Right. So like I was starting to say when I got distracted by my own cat choices, you were saying eugenics is necessarily connected to superior race idea. And I was about to say like, well, let's disconnect those two. Let's tease them apart. And let's say, I don't know. I don't actually know enough about what the word eugenics means. So maybe we use a different word.
Yeah. And the problem is eugenics literally is a word that was coined by groups of people who were fucking awful and evil and shitty.
Cool.
So
let's make up a new word. That's sinsi pow. That word.
That's a
means,
terrible word that doesn't have, you'll never remember it.
That word means the thing that maybe theoretically could be happening right now, whereby nature is just like, here's a bunch of pandemics, bitches. Die, half of you.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't argue that there's a moral implication to that move. I mean, in the same way that, think of it this way, in the same way that like when we look back at when the dinosaurs died and our theory is that a comet hit or a meteorite or whatever you want to call it, and the sky went black because of all the dust, they all died.
Right.
That wasn't because they were good or bad.
Yeah. And unfortunately, though, What gets applied over that, though, is systems that we have created that unequally protect or don't protect us from the effects of said. So it isn't random. It isn't just like virus goes crazy and kills everybody. No, virus kills specifically people who are less protected by the inherently power-oriented systems that we've created. And so the tragedy is unequally distributed.
Okay, now, is that technically true in terms of the numbers? Like, yeah. It is?
For sure, for okay. sure, 100%. Okay. The incidents just in the U.S. or even just in California, the incidence among lower-income Latinos is insanely higher than it is among, you know, and that's partially because of access to being able to work from home, from a computer, and not go to work. It has to do with the types of work we have. It has to do with Elon okay. Musk insisting that his workers come into his factory so that he can keep making money. You know, it has to do okay. with...
Okay, so yeah. then it doesn't work.
Yeah. So the problem is the neutrality of the of nature's attempt, if we ascribe that thing to it, is fucked up by the totally non-neutrality of the human systems that it is trying to affect.
What if, I hear that, makes total sense. If that's why nature is saying that, what if that's why we get six pandemics instead of like, one?
I got to do a lot to really get through, to push through the problem. Yeah, I don't know.
Because there may, because that, you know, we don't know what the next strain is and who it kills and why and how.
Yep.
Right. It's,
and the other problem is just the level of suffering specific. Rather than death, it's not death that I'm afraid of. For me personally, it's not death I'm afraid of. It's suffering I'm afraid of, both in myself and in others.
Well, sure. None of us want to suffer, and suffering is terrible. But that doesn't change the fact that nature may be correct in its assessment that half of us need to fucking die.
Right.
And I mean, I, of course, my human heart preference is that none of us have to suffer while we die. I don't want that for anybody, yeah. no matter what the eugenics or non-eugenics are. But that doesn't change the cold-hearted kind of fact that if having fewer humans helps solve the problem, perhaps that's what nature is up to.
Yeah. I don't know.
And I mean, it's like sad if you let it be, or it's just dinosaurs and a comet.
Right. Zoom out and say that is great. And then I just get into the weeds of like, just literally looking people in the eyes who I know who are suffering because of either because they are sufferers of it or because someone died or because they lost somebody.
Oh, and no, just it's being terrible. Like, it's terrible disease.
I can't even like pretend to have that zoom out. Then I go like, but fuck. And it's an interesting philosophical argument to zoom out and have. But then I get 3D about it with my ego that has connections to individual people who are not a population, but who are just human people. And then all my high-minded things break down because I'm like, I just got to look a person in the eye and be like, fuck. Yeah, see,
I don't have that. And you could call me a sociopath, or you could call me evolved, or you could call me aloof. You could put any kind of judgments you want, good or bad, on it. And it's not, when I say I don't have that, that doesn't mean I don't care about my friends and my family who are suffering. I do. But it doesn't change the sort of like, I don't want anyone I care about to suffer. And I've suffered so much in this life and gained so much from it that I just am not in a position to claim superiority over to know better than suffering. I don't know better. I don't know that suffering is bad. I know that it hurts. And I also know that it creates great change and a vast, powerful, potent healing. So I feel like it would actually be arrogant of me to say anything other than, well, consciousness is doing what consciousness is doing and nature is doing what nature is doing, but oh, save my Chris. Who the fuck is Chris in the big picture of the value of suffering? Chris ain't nobody. Chris is going to die anyway real soon in terms of, if you think about time, or in terms of the bigness of the full expanse of time, Chris's life is a fart in the wind. Chris's life ain't worth shit. My life ain't worth shit.
Right. Yours let's make it personal. Mine is.
It's not.
Mine's a long fart in the wind, but otherwise it's still just a fart in the wind.
I mean, how can we argue? I just can't argue that the 80 years of one lady matters more than the full future of all beings. I don't care.
Then I'll be like, well, why do we even attach the value to humanity surviving? I mean, let's blow that up.
That is a good question. And that I've thought about many times. And personally, I'm not very attached to humanity surviving because humanity is a fucking mess. But also, if humanity chooses to grow and evolve, and certain of us, I think it's kind of like this. Some people will, like, I don't know, do their ascension work or like evolve or get whatever has to happen. And then they'll be a part of the next iteration of whatever humanity is in its higher consciousness form. But the rest of us are going to fucking die off because we've already killed the planet and the ozone. It's all happening anyway. So like, I don't have a problem with that next layer of the argument. I'm like, cool, cool, cool. Get rid of them. They are problematic, the humans, including myself. So if I wind up in the nick of time, choosing the choices that lead to me being a part of the next layer of consciousness iteration of humans, so be it. But if I'm not a part of that group because I didn't get my shit together, so be it. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah. I mean, I know enough about myself that if we return to the Thanos argument, I definitely want to get snapped. I do not want to deal with being one of the people who stays behind.
Huh.
That is terrifying to me. I'd much rather be obliterated.
Why? Tell me more.
Because I know myself well enough to know I would be so consumed by survivor's guilt and grief over the massive loss that I could never love again. Like, that's what I think.
Wow.
And like, there's also something to be said for the snap. Like, that's immediate up-leveling or up-ledgering.
That's immediate. Like,
no, because I mean, I'm assuming that if there is any, you know, if I return to soul form or something and I don't just totally vanish from all existence, great. I just got it. I was granted the keys to the kingdom.
And at least you were granted the completion of suffering in this form in this lifetime.
Exactly.
In that moment.
Yeah.
But you don't know what the snap means for your next incarnation.
Nope. No idea. So maybe it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I hesitate to share this, but I'm going to. I'm gonna put this out there by saying I have zero suicidal ideation, and you know, content warning. This is what I'm talking about, though. I think intellectually quite often about the idea of like, if I dread the possibility of having to deal with something really challenging, like someone important to me dying or suffering, I consider, I hate even saying it this way, but I think, well, then I could just take myself out and then I wouldn't have to face that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That is, I mean, it feels really gross to say that because I feel like I'm minimizing the intensity of suicide and those ideas, because that's so fucking intense for so many of us. Either having been a victim of it, of someone else doing it, or actually fearing it in a very intense emotional way. But I do it in a very intellectual way because the idea of the dread of facing that stuff and the simplicity of obliteration seems so clean.
I hear you. I have no judgment on that thought experiment, because people who are suffering and choosing it from a deep state of suffering, that's very different from what you're talking about. I mean, it's kind of similar because you're saying
to avoid suffering.
You're asking to avoid it. Exactly. I was just going to say that. Yeah. But I mean, I don't think you're insulting someone else's pain by acknowledging that you might choose something similar.
Right. And that's also to say, I wouldn't actually choose something similar. I have that, but that thought is present in me quite often. I will go, well, I'm afraid that might happen. So maybe, of course not. Shut the fuck up.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar in a way to what I'm saying about taking the zoomed out perspective. I mean, all of this to me comes back to astrology, because if you look at my chart, my chart is built as someone who zooms out. That's what I do. I'm a zoom outer. Yours is not. You're a zoom inner.
Yeah.
That's literally the difference.
I'm one to one. I'm social. If you look at my, go ahead.
That's literally the difference between you and I and in our organic makeup. And so there's unity in the multiplicity. We need to be different so that the fucking world survives. If everybody was me, we'd have a lot of problems. But if everybody was you, we'd have a lot of problems.
Yeah.
So we need this diversity, you know?
Yeah.
That's my point being, it comes back to your suicide thing, whereby I don't judge your suicide thing. I have no response to it at all internally. I go, oh yeah, sure. That could, I mean, I hear you, because I'm such a zoom outer that I'm like, well, I mean, you die, you come back anyway. Who gives a fuck? I'll miss you. I'll be sad, but you'll come back and then we'll have another iteration. That's fine. Yeah. Or we won't. And that's okay too. Not because I don't care about you in this. I adore you and I care a lot about you and I want you well. And I've just been through too much to ever again be able to have the point of view that like any individual thing shouldn't happen if it hurts.
Yeah.
Everything that good in my life has come from everything else that hurt a lot. And yeah. I don't want to lose you, Cassidy. Please don't kill yourself.
I will not. I will not in any way. I literally have zero actual feelings in that regard. Yeah. I have thoughts. I have not feelings.
And we are not on this podcast encouraging people to take suicide lightly.
Any way.
No, no.
Yeah.
We're speaking in a theoretical way about broad concepts. What were you, were going to say something, Desmond?
You were just talking about kind of reincarnation, which kind of led me to this. Like, let's take a super low number and say that the world's population had been at 10,000 for the last 1,000 years. All of those souls are reincarnating and everyone's getting 100 chances. Now with the population growing, where the fuck are these extra souls coming from? And is that part of the problem that we have all of these baby souls instead of a population of people who have been able to do this 100 times and get better at it?
Well, okay, I have answers to this if you want them.
Absolutely.
Okay. And please help me if any of my responses don't actually apply to what you're asking, let me know, because I think I'm understanding the question you're asking, but if I miss anything. The first thing is, the notion is that if you're reincarnating, you come into that next life with all the wisdom and experience you've had in the previous lives. So you're not a new soul. You're evolved a little forward, or at least you're exactly where you were last time. So there's that Correct. Point. So you don't get like all these new souls. Like that's
But if we used to have, if there used to be 1 million people on the planet and now there's 7 billion people on the planet, where did those other 7.5 billion souls come from?
Because if each person has a soul, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And as we reincarnate, you'd think that would mean a stable population.
There's more people on the planet right now than have existed through the history of Earth.
I see what you're asking.
All combined. Yeah.
Where are these new souls coming from?
Okay, that's a really interesting question. And the first immediate sense I get about it, and we should ask this in the records.
That might be our question for the records. Let's talk one about of them anyways, soul math.
The feeling I get, I'm sort of opening my field and just listening for guidance, is that some of them are not from here. Okay, that they're from intergalactic places that they're from. Like, I tend to consider myself a galactic traveler. Newman Manfredson considers himself an Arcturian. There are a lot of woo-woo people who believe that what's happening right now on the planet is that a lot of different races are embodying in Earth bodies to help and to contribute, and some not to help and not to, because they're dicks or because they have nefarious intentions or for whatever reason. So there's that piece. And then I don't think that covers all of it, though, because you ask a really good question. And I get that you're right, that there's more to that answer. I think we should look at that.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if we're looking at it through this sort of computer program spreadsheet framework.
I'm sure.
You know, there are X plus one, you know.
Yeah. But it still seems overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I would like to feel into whatever they bring through about that, because that's just my initial, what I can feel into from here. My cat is now deeply licking my hand. Deep awesome. Licking. Like, shoot.
Say that it's 2:15 or 3:15 your time, and we have about 45 minutes before we all need to just jump off. So we need to be done. Do we want to go into the records? And if so, we have one question. And I feel like we haven't even talked about a subject that I was hoping we'd talk about. It's a purely practical. It seems much smaller in scope than the grand scheme that we've brought up, which is up level. Ah, not up ledger, but up leveling. We've wanted to sort of grapple with the idea of up leveling the podcast's reach. And I'm wondering if we can get any guidance on that. I know it's a total right turn to today's topics, but.
No. Actually, you know what's really interesting on that? And for the listeners, first of all, I didn't get to finish saying what I was just saying about the cat is licking my hand.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Like mid-sentence, you were like, great, great, great. Anyway, other things. And I'm like, what is happening?
I literally thought you were done with that. You were just saying hand. Well, sorry. Go ahead, though. I apologize for interrupting.
She was annoying and wanted to get out. And then she was at the window very adorably wanting to get in. And now she's on my lap, like really aggressively licking me. And so I feel like she's a part of, like, I mean this in a sincere way. Animals are so tapped into certain levels of consciousness that we have to like meditate and do woo-woo shit to get to. That they just are that. And so frequently, whatever my animals are doing is a reflection of something important that's happening. And I'll be more specific. This happens a lot in healing class and in healing sessions. So like before the healing session, the dog will be like anxious and crazy and all over and chewing on stuff. I open the records and she immediately goes calm, sits in my lap, curls in a ball, goes to sleep. And other times before a healing session, she's real like mopey and sad. And she's looking at me like, mah. We go in the records. I start the healing and she curls in my lap and falls asleep. So I just started to like notice more and more like the behaviors that that Squeezle, the dog, isn't exhibiting before a session. I'm going to put a pause in that sentence and give a little background context that they taught us in Sufi school. And then in the other two places I studied, this is what happens for me. About an hour before each client, I start to feel what's happening for the client. And before I knew that, I thought, oh, I'm getting sick all the time lately. Or, oh, my back hurts a lot. Or, oh, suddenly I'm in a bad mood. And then I'd realize, oh, I asked a bunch of questions and none of that was me. That's me tapping into. And the way I got it is in the session, the client would go, I'm depressed today. And I go, oh, I was vibing into your soul. What's really happening is their energy field, their soul, their consciousness, whatever you like to call it, is reaching out before the session to my system and going, we're going to heal this, right? I'm really fucked up about this. Can we heal this? And my soul and my energy field is going, yeah, I got you. Let's start working it now. Meanwhile, I'm like at Taco Bell trying to buy some beans.
And you're crying. Why am I crying? Probably because you're going to eat Taco Bell. Maybe that's
probably not wrong. You know what the most cry-inducing thing about Taco Bell for me is? They don't have goddamn Diet Coke. They only have Diet Pepsi.
Oh, 3D problems.
All of that is a very long-winded way of saying, having paid attention to my own awareness before a session and the dog's behavior before a session, lately I find myself quite interested in like, when the cat wants to go out and then the cat wants to come in and then the cat's on my lap, she's still here right now. Look at her.
Aww.
Those eyes, right? It's like, what else is she aware of that we're not aware of?
Trying to tell you?
Or just what is she aware of? Sometimes animals are so tapped in, they just behave from their awareness. Like she's on my lap now. Is she aware that we're going in the records soon? Is she aware that like I don't know, but I find it very fascinating. I have no end game with that question. I just really wanted to verbalize it because of how cool it is, the way that happens with my clients, it happens with the dog, and now I'm seeing the cat do these things, and I'm going, huh, end of question series.
Yeah, I love all of your examples of the pet, of how your pets specifically are really tend to, and we've seen it on the podcast even, like really react to what's happening.
They're really dialed in. So back to your question about the podcast, what I wanted to tell the listener was that we've been talking amongst ourselves that about like, how do we like get more people to listen? And how do we get the people that already listen to like tell their freaking friends to listen if you like it? Like, could you tell your friends? And I wanted to tell you, and I keep forgetting both of you, pretty much every day right now, I get two or three, my Facebook pings me and says, you got two or three new likes on the Facebook page of the podcast, which was not happening before. We were not getting them daily. I was not getting daily pings. Like, you have two people who just liked your podcast. And so, I mean, I feel like steadily we're moving forward. It's just slower than I'd certainly like it to be. But we did want to make a direct plea to everyone listening. If you like listening to us, could you maybe tell your whole family and all your friends and everyone you ever met?
Please do, everybody.
We want more people to like it.
Yeah. And I think it's actually a really fun idea, Cass, to like ask a deep esoteric question and then also be like, hey, record keepers, how do we get this? Because here's how I think about it, right? Something I know in my reality is that if I'm actually sincerely for real, and that's an important distinction, engaged in actually trying to contribute to other people and it being less about me getting likes and the podcast getting liked. If this is actually about, does this help people? Does it raise consciousness? Does it do something good for the planet that the planet actually benefits from and needs? When I'm asking that question, I watch in my own life, things expand. Like my business always, I get more clients, more people come to the retreat. When I'm saying to God and the records, like, hey, who else could benefit from this? I notice when I start asking a lot of questions like, bring me more people. How do I get more people? Are there more clients coming? Can I have more clients? Everything starts to tighten. So it's like, I just wanted to remind myself that because I forget it regularly. And when I remember it, things expand again. That what if that's the question we can be leaning into is like, hey, you know, universe, if this is contributing, who else would benefit from it?
Yeah. Is there anything to increase the reach of benefit, the, you know, make it better and more important to people, more
exactly
to the person listening right now. A way to reach more people is to talk to different kinds of people. And if you email us, there's a really good chance you could get on the show and we could talk to you and we could open your records and we could have some fun. So there you go. You want to grow the show? Come on it.
Yeah.
Wow, that felt aggressive. You better listen to Desmond. Just keep in mind, everybody, Desmond listens to Eminem all day. You do not want to piss him off. Like, he's already seeming a little cranky about this. So I say, email us, come on the show, you know. Anyway, but in a sincere way, truly, like, you know, I am not a perfect person. And I'm not always, you know, Jesusly focused on helping everyone. But every single day I get reoriented back to doing so. Like, I fall off that being my focus pedestal regularly. That's a big part of what spirituality is to me, is a lot of why I do it personally is to get back to what actually matters. We all get so easily lost and pulled into everything that doesn't actually matter in the long run. And that, from my understanding and from the teachings I believe in, that is just human nature. That's not because we're terrible and evil and a lowly species. That's built into the organism so that we will become dependent upon and lean into the light. And it can help reorient us. It's called a relationship with the divine. It's not arrive at a place, be perfect, and go from there. Though we do have saints and prophets that show up like that, who are like, hey, this is what it looks like to be all actualized. Here's some teachings. Okay, work with that for 50 millennia. We'll see you later.
I'll be back in a splintered soul.
Yes. Okay. So let's open the records and we're going to ask about 7 billion people.
We're
going to
ask about the math of reincarnation and an increasing population, if they can just shed any insight into that. And how do we increase the
positive reach
and positive impact of our show?
Yeah. Fantastic. Let me sit with this. I'm trying to get whose records we're opening. Is it our three people? No. Is it the collective? No. Is it mine? Well, that reads. That's weird. Is it the Divine Light Healing Center? No. Is it the podcast? No. Why would it be mine? Cassidy, Desmond, mine.
Never done that. We've never just opened your records and talked to your record keepers. That's interesting.
All right. I hope it's interesting. I it's just what I'm getting. Anyone else? Well, let's start there. And then maybe when we're in there, Yeah. Something. Yeah, well, let's start there. And maybe then I can get more clarity on where to go from there. Because we can always open more spaces and people and companies and from inside there. Okay. Sorry, I was also just distracted by the snow is falling really hard now, but it's like that state between rain and snow where it's not rain, but it's not exactly snow. It's like lighthearted snow.
Having grown up in that weather, it's called sleet.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, great. It is sleeting.
Sleeting.
Okay, so let's see. I've already been in my records a bunch today, working with clients and myself earlier. So I'm just going to dive in with a prayer that reads, okay, so we do acknowledge the forces of light. Yeah, I have a feeling once we get in my records, we'll open other people's, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness. See, it's right there in the prayer. And direct my attention to the work at hand, which is to contribute to people. Help me to know myself in the light of the Akashic records. Help me to see myself in the eyes of the Lords of the records, through the eyes of the Lords of the records, and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of me have for me. Just go quiet for a moment. Okay. So I'm dropping in more fully to that. And as I do that, we're going to first ask, just asking to be deepened into my own records here by the Lords, the Masters, and the Teachers of the records, by the Divine Light itself. And I first want to ask, like, we have two questions, one about the math of the population of humans and reincarnation, and at least a second question about our podcast. So is it in our highest good to do this right from here in my records? Yes. Hey, that's so weird, but okay. We'll at least start here. Okay, so let's go with the podcast first. It just feels like smaller and simpler. So is Lords, Masters, and Teachers of my records, is there anything we collectively, the three of us, or maybe our listeners or all of that can be doing to contribute to more people with the podcast by reaching more people? Like, A, do more people, will more people benefit from listening to us? Yes, absolutely. Okay. And so what can be done on our end to increase how many people are listening and thereby benefiting? Okay. All right. Well, so first piece for me is some homework on, they're saying, you know how when you go in the records and you ask, you know, the saying, ask and it is given. For me, when I connect to source, which I do through going into the records, when I ask, it is given. If what I'm asking is in alignment with the highest good for all concerned, you know? And so they're saying in the records in the morning, when you're in the records, ask us to bring you the people who would benefit from hearing the podcast. And so in this moment, they're doing this thing they do with me regularly where they, this is hard to explain. They're basically working with me energetically right now to increase the amount of people who will hear us, find us, discover us, that would benefit from finding us, discovering us, hearing us. So I'm just sitting in that while they do that for a minute. And while they're doing that, I'm also wondering internally, so why would we not open Cassidy and Desmond's? And they're like, oh, okay. Well, they're like, this is about your energetic imprint as a healer, contributing energetically the healing you have to contribute to the people. The joy and the pleasure and the fun is in the community of the three of you and the three of us. And, but if you're looking at the deepest service that you're doing, it's the healing work and the Akashic work. And so we, the Akasha and the beings of light in the Akasha, are, our role is to bring more consciousness and light to the planet. And so that is happening. This imprint is, needs to be on the request. They're like, whatever you guys do in your own way is.
Katie, you seem to have frozen. You seem to be frozen, freezing up.
All right. Well, Cass, anything on that?
Unfortunately, you said it all and you heard it, but we did not hear the last 30 seconds of what you just said. The thing where you said it didn't occur to me. You were frozen that whole time.
Oh, but you heard before that?
I only heard you say, it didn't occur to me.
But you heard everything before that section.
No, I heard from imprint, you talked about your imprint needing to be on it, and then when you started to talk about us, it went away.
Okay. Well, just to fill you in, it was basically like the main gist of what we meaning me and my light team are contributing is the light healing, and it's what they're invested in. So they're saying the way to bring more people in is the way I bring more people into everything I do that has to do with the light healing, which is ask them, go in the records and ask them. And go in the records and do this kind of energetic healing work that I do, where they sort of, it's sort of like they make me vibrationally resonant with all the souls that need what I have. And so I don't know if we went, if the sound went away during the section where I was saying they were working with me energetically, but they were working with me energetically, and they are right now, to literally in this moment pull in more people who would benefit and line me up with the frequency of, I want to say, being like an attracting rod to those who would benefit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
And then when they were talking about you, they were saying, whatever you do in your way to bring people to things, please do it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
But there's no grand spiritual wisdom to that for me. It's more just like, do your thing. You know what to do. Just do it, is what I'm hearing. Hmm. And that's also grand spiritual wisdom.
Well, yeah, maybe, right? I think that it's more like we should open your records to find out what you should do. And we should open Desmond's records to find out what he can do. If that's the question we're asking, I think they're just wanting to let me know what I need to do. But that's because I'm in my records, right? Yeah. So that feels clear. Let me ask the second question in my records, which I get a yes on doing that. And then let's close mine and open yours,
right,
and see what we get in there for each of you. Yeah, that reads. Okay. Okay, how would you frame the question, Desmond?
Most simply put, where are all these new souls coming from? You know, if every new being born is incorporating a previously...
Is a reincarnated soul.
Yeah. Then, where
did all the new people come from?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotcha.
And just in addition, are a lot of them new souls that, right, you know, aren't bringing a whole lot of wisdom with them?
Okay, so a couple things. This is so, so interesting. Okay, they show me like a lot of things all at once. So I'm going to try to tease this apart. The first thing is some of these things that you're, these beings, these entities, these people you're calling new souls, they're not ignorant. And it's not that they don't know stuff. It's that they're only new to... they're only new to inhabiting the human form. They're not new to existing. They're new to inhabiting the human form. And they're coming from other places, which is similar to what Katie was saying earlier about they're coming from other dimensions. They're coming from other planets. They're coming from other places. Other planets is incorrect, they say. Other dimensions and other places. Okay. So this is so funny. They're talking about the millennials. And you know how some of us, like, what are we, Gen X, Gen Z? I always forget. Gen X.
We're X.
And, yeah.
At least me and Desmond give are. Yeah.
Yeah. That we give millennials a hard time because they can be fucking annoying. And the ways that they're annoying, in large part, they're talking about is that they have erased, to us, it feels like they're entitled and they're like, I'm so special and I'm a special flower. And so I don't have to have a job, but we would like to offer a different frame to that, which is they come in blank slated so that they can create more from a space of what actually matters. The judgments of your generation, and they're speaking now to each generation before the coming generations. The judgments of your generation are not right just because they're your judgments. They're just your judgments. So you've got to look at what are the millennials actually creating? And what are the ones that are younger than the millennials actually creating? And in a large part, okay, if you look at, for example, they're showing me the young girl whose name I can't get right now, who is the environmentally conscious girl. Yes, who's like 5 years old or whatever it is, 9 years old, 11, 12, whatever she is.
She's probably like 15,
Fantastic. That's the new generation. That's who these quote unquote new souls are. They're not new to existing and they're not new to consciousness. They're in fact quite evolved in terms of consciousness and existing. And they're here to contribute to those of us, to the rest of us who are dinosaurs dying off with our old rigid, I have to drive a diesel car ideas. So that's one group of them. So I just want to ask, does that account for the entire? No. So who are the rest of them? Okay, some of them are, as Katie was saying before, specifically what they're saying, and now we're going to get real judged by a lot of people, is reptilian. That's so interesting because I tend to resist a lot of the reptilian conversations that a lot of woo-woo people have, but they're showing it to me very clearly. They're like, there's a lot of reptilians here right now. Reptilians are attempting to take control of the planet for their own selfish for their own purposes. It's almost like they want to propagate. Is that a word? Propagate more of themselves. They want to build more, but they're not really thinking about the galactic, the bigger picture of consciousness. They're just like, we buy, we build more, you know, like fracking and things like fracking. And when people like, what's that called? When you real estate investors who just buy a property and build more stuff and don't think about and apartments and more and more condos and buildings and houses and rows of houses that are all the same that are not ecologically consciously built. That's reptilian energy. And there's a lot of them here. So a lot of them is that. Okay. And does that make up for the rest of it? No, there's one more chunk. Oh, okay. So, by the way, the deep sighing stuff I'm doing is every time they give me new information that I couldn't have come up with myself, it comes in as an energy first, and it drops all the way down to like my anus. Like it goes through my heart and it goes through my belly and it goes through my pelvic floor and then it's like down. So it's like, whoo, it's kind of an intense like receiving of energy for me. So anyway, that's what that is. Okay, this third group that they're talking about that makes up for the extra bodies, this has something to do with time. It's so funny because weren't you making a time joke? You were making a time joke earlier, mm-hmm. Cassidy.
The time is dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, so this is like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, let me try to, this has to do with time and how you don't experience time the way other experience time and other forms don't experience time. So the folding layers of consciousness, they fold on each other. my brain, I could just hear the, okay. So if you imagine that time folds the way, if you picture an accordion door in like a kindergarten room, you know how they sometimes separate parts of the kindergarten pod by an accordion door? They're just pulling from my life, things I'll understand. The folds in the accordion, if you think of time like that, that it can fold in and be tight, or it can expand out and be spread out, you will experience, in your experience of time, you will experience more beings here in your moment of time. But you have to understand that your moment of time is like this to us. Your entire life existence is like that to us. It's actually less than that. So coming and going, existing here is not, it's just not the same. So then I'm hearing the human question in response is like, yeah, but we're living here and there are actual physical bodies here and there's more actual physical bodies. So how can there be more actual physical bodies on this earth if you're saying they aren't actually here all at the same time? And they're like, yeah, because time works different. Your experience of what you call physical bodies is also, you're seeing it through your lens of three-dimensional God limitation. Sorry, but that's what it is.
So I'm sorry to interrupt, but this Please. Would lead me to believe that at this moment in time on Earth that I'm experiencing, one soul could be experiencing two or three different bodies as their time is, since time doesn't matter, they can come back to this time and inhabit another body anytime. Hmm.
Is that correct? Yes. But think of it this way, they say. Think of it this way. It's almost as if Oh my God, this is so trippy. This is so trippy. I almost can't take it because you have to understand, I'm getting the energy of this in my body and I do not understand it in my mind. It's very intense. Okay, I'm going to calm down. Okay, think of it like this. Several dimensions of consciousness are co-concurrently existing in what you're calling now. So it's... So it's not only about time, it's about dimensionality. So when you said a moment ago, Desmond, so you're saying that one soul could be showing up in several bodies on this planet at this moment. I get a yes on that. They go, yes. And additionally, in addition to that, imagine a soul existing in several dimensions. But you, Desmond, are experiencing that soul as five different people. Holy fuck. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah. As someone who does a time travel podcast, this makes an insane amount of sense.
Wow.
Please listen to Time Pop. Where we review Endgame with Scott Lifton. Thanos.
Katie Rubin... I have a hard time with everything that was just said, and I believe it 100% at the same time, because this is so clear in my body. It's so clear. All right. So is it in our highest good now to open Cassidy's records and then Desmond's? Yes. Do we have time?
We have about 9 minutes. Ask them if they think they can do it in 9 minutes.
Yes. We'll go real fucking fast. So Lords, Masters, and Teachers, thank you for your love and compassion. Sorry, I want to thank the Masters and Teachers and loved ones for their love and compassion, the Lords of the Records for their point of view. I just got that we should go Desmond and then Cass. And I'd like to thank the Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing. Please return my energy to my complete human wholeness. Return me to myself. The divine portal of the Akashic Records of Catherine Lauren Hardy Rubin are now closed. Amen. Desmond, what's your legal name?
Desmond Paul McNeese.
Okay, here we go. So we do, I have to go straight to the prayer. So, you know, breathe into your low belly, open your heart a little bit, soften your mind, just a touch if you can. So we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance. Can I ask? Okay, I'm going to open both your records, Cassidy Jamal Brown. Okay, so we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, amen. Protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness. Direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know Desmond Paul McNeese and Cassidy Jamal Brown in the light of the Akashic Records. Help me to see Desmond Paul McNeese, Cassidy Jamal Brown through the eyes of the Lords of the Records and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the Masters, Teachers, and loved ones of Desmond Paul McNeese and Cassidy Jamal Brown have for Desmond Paul McNeese and Cassidy Jamal Brown. I'll go quiet for a moment. All right. Oof. Okay. Records are open. So I'm just asking now to the Lords, Masters, and Teachers, the records of Desmond Paul McNeese, Cassidy Jamal Brown, you could deepen me into their both of their records at the same time. I mean, and so I'm going to go, I'll start with Desmond, I guess. Okay, Desmond. So is there Lords, Masters, and Teachers, the records of Desmond Paul McNeese, is there anything he can do in his reality and or right here, right now, and or that we can do in his, no, that he can do to increase the reach of our podcast and help more people listen to it so that more people can benefit from whatever it has to be benefited from. So yes, let me listen just for a moment. Okay, well, this is very interesting. So this is about, for you, it's more about, Desmond, you actually fully believing in your own value and believing that what you have is so valuable that people want it. And they're like, next time we should do a healing on self-valuing because you understand quite well, Desmond, they say, from your mind. You're like, yeah, I have to act like this and I do these things and that's the right way to be and that's how you do stuff. Don't be a loser and show up on time and this kind of thing. But there are parts of you buried that, not even that deeply buried, you're aware of them, that you're not quite sure that, in other words, there are parts of you that are working against in your body, working against the active way that you live in your life. You live like, yeah, get out there, tell the people, do the thing, make it happen. but internally you're carrying some old stuff that we can totally clear, such that when we clear it, it's like you become more of a vessel of light to which more beings are drawn, like moths to a flame. There are three ways to create in reality, in your reality, from the darkness, through control, and energetic manipulation. Many famous people work this way. Number two is from the ego, through pushing, trying, and efforting. And number three is through alignment with source, such that you become a beacon of light to which moths are drawn. It's your choice. So whatever you feel capable of right now in the efforting realm, we support. And because we are beings of light and we like to offer the highest possible conscious choice, we would like to also offer this suggestion for some energetic clearing for your body, being soul, heart, and spirit, that would turn you, that would align you more with the frequency of your soul's vibration, such that you could easily attract people without efforting. Does that make sense? Okay. So let us do that next time, if you're all in agreement with that.
I wrote it down already. We have a great topic for next session.
Very cool. Okay. And then for Cassidy, and so we're asking Lords, Masters, Teachers of the Akashic Records of Cassidy Jamal Brown, what can Cassidy be doing, if anything, to be bringing more folks to listen to us so they may benefit from whatever benefits we have to offer? All right. This is a very different energy. Okay. So they're like this. They're saying, I have to look at the time. Oh, we have 2 minutes. Okay. Quick like money. With you, Cass, they say it's like you have this joy in you that when you bubble over with joy about a thing, everybody wants to be a part of the thing you're doing. So all you need to do is organically bubble with joy about it in public, Facebook, with friends, in your pod, whoever, wherever, everywhere. Now, here's the rub. Your joy bubbling can easily boil over the edge of the pot and turn into something else that has this energy. If you see my face.
Yeah.
And that so what that is that it turns into is more of a fear-based self-aggrandizement that is kind of like, it's like, you know, the saying, I'm the biggest piece of shit the world revolves around.
But boy, do I get it.
Right? Or the saying, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about.
Yep.
Like, in other words, the parts of ourselves as humans that really think lowly of themselves will often overcompensate by bragging or saying that they're very awesome.
Yeah. No, love this. This is awesome. It's amazing.
Okay. So they're like, that thing, when you do that, pushes everyone away. And in fact, they're saying this, every acting job you've ever lost. Oh my God. That is a big deal. Has come from that energy being present in some dynamic you had with someone. Every acting job you've ever gotten has come from the pleasure and the bliss of the effervescent bubbling we named before, emanating from you so effervescently that people want to be around it. Now, we will do some healing on this piece as well for you next time to make it easier to choose the effervescent bubbling. However, with you, it's very much about consciously choosing in every moment, asking yourself, wait a minute, am I trying to prove something from I'm not a pathetic piece of shit, and so I'm going to aggrandize? Or am I actually organically, effervescently bubbling with joy? You feel the difference. You know the difference. And the best advice we can give you is just don't say any words if it's not the joy bubbling, effervescent option. Because your mind goes, well, what do I do if I notice that I'm in the other thing? Just don't talk.
This is amazing. I'm so happy right now. And I have so much to say about it. We don't have time. So we'll talk about it the next time.
Okay, I got to close your guys' records because I can't do my next call as you.
Okay.
This was incredible. The two energies are so different and they're both in my body right now. Ah, I gotta go. All right. I want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their what? Love and compassion. And the lords of the records for their point of view. And the Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing. Please, for God's sake, send Cassidy Jamal Brown and Desmond Paul McNeese's energy back to themselves. Return them, please, both to their
get them out of me
human wholeness now. Thank you. Okay, that's so funny. The Divine Portal and the Akashic Records for Desmond Paul McNeese and Cassidy Jamal Brown are now closed. Amen. 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 I am late. That was amazing. We have to talk about it next time.
Do your work.
Love you. Do your work.
Love you, Desmond and Katie.
What are you asking for? All of the answers. Say what? All of the answers. Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod, @allanswerspod. Thank you.
All Katie has to do is heal her two coworkers and her business will be fine.
We're the problem.
Heal thyself.
Producer, heal thyself.
Co-host, heal thyself.
That was a Sounds Awesome production.